how much can a dollar buy where you live? What kind of an apartment could you rent for maybe $1,000? Or what kind of house can you get for $300,000? Your responses have been pouring in from Orleans, Massachusetts, where I live. I can get a donut hole for under a buck. I can rent a basement room for all months but summer under a grand. And I could buy a small condo in an industrial park for under $300,000.
This is Larry Bush. I live near Tampa, Florida. We can buy a 44-ounce soda for a dollar. We can rent a 1,500-square-foot condo for $1,000 per month. And in Tampa, we can buy a 3,000-square-foot house with a nice property for about $300,000.
Well, this also comes from Tampa. $1 can buy a lot of food at Sanwa Market in Hillsborough on Hillsborough Avenue. $1,000 will rent a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom renovated home with a yard and a garage. And for $300,000, we'll give you a choice of stunning renovated vintage bungalow homes in the historic quarter in the center of the city. Houses sell in a week with bidding wars right now. From the East Coast, rather, to the Midwest, from Fremont, Nebraska, you tell us that $1,000 will get you a luxury apartment. $300,000 will get you a mini mansion. The cost of living here is great. That's just about the only thing I like about it. And from Missouri, One listener says, I live in St. Louis. I could buy $1 worth of gas, which doesn't do me any good. But for $1,000, I could rent a pretty amazing 3-bedroom apartment with a garage and a washing machine and a dryer. We are the last of the low-rent cities. And for $300,000, I could buy anyone's version of a dream house, white picket fence and all. Well, let's go to the west side.
My name is Jack Stewart. I live in San Francisco, California. Let's see, for a dollar, I can go and get a Chinese pastry. For $1,000, I can rent an apartment in Vallejo, and for $300,000, I might be able to buy a lot and build a house on it.
Kate writes to us on Facebook, in the Bay Area, $1 for a cup of coffee at the 7-Eleven, not Starbucks, she adds, $1,000 for a 1-bedroom basement apartment to share with 14 adults, and $300,000, a dilapidated shack on 10 square feet of land. Well, we want to hear from you in your town. What does a dollar, $1,000, $300,000 get for you? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE and be sure to follow us on Twitter at The Takeaway. Stay with us. So what's a dollar worth to you?
Here in Salt Lake City, for a dollar, you could get a cup of yogurt, a candy bar, or 38 ounces of gasoline. For $1,000 in the city, you can rent an apartment of 1 to 2 beds and 1 bath. It probably would not include off-street parking, and it probably would not have a washer and dryer or dishwasher in the unit, although it may. For $300,000 in Salt Lake City, you can buy roughly a 3-bed, 2-bath house on about a tenth of an acre in a pleasant middle-class neighborhood.
Well, thanks to Laura there. From Pleasanton, California, we hear this about the San Francisco Bay Area. I could buy a Clif Bar, a candy bar, or a couple of pieces of in-season fruit or veggies for a dollar. I could maybe buy a small, older home in a lesser neighborhood or an apartment unit for $300,000 and call me with any rental for $1,000 a month within a 15-mile radius of here. I will take it.
Hi, this is Alina from Texas, and I have to say, $1,000 can get you a nice 2-bedroom, 2-bath apartment in a gated community, and $300,000 can get you a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom house with a yard and a 2-car garage.
And from Barbara in Honolulu, all is impossible in Hawaii, she says. Well, new data from the Commerce Department is putting a much finer point on how far a dollar goes where you live. According to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, a dollar buys the most goods and services in the state of Mississippi. And the least in my home of Washington, D.C., Hawaii comes in a close second where all things are impossible. But what does this data mean when it comes to how people value location and affordability in choosing where to live and whether or not to move? Joining me now is Daniel Shoag, Assistant Professor of Public Policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Welcome, Daniel.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Well, you heard some of the responses from the listeners about what a dollar or $1,000 buys them in their communities, and Barbara from Honolulu saying all is impossible with a dollar where she lives. How do those comments strike you?
Well, I can empathize. I'm from Cleveland, and moving to Boston was kind of a sticker shock. And I think that the differences those people are speaking about are real and important when people decide where to live and work.
Well, we're used to, of course, it's no surprise that things are cheaper in Mississippi than they are in Washington, D.C. or downtown New York. That's not a surprise. But we're learning a lot more about why things cost so much less in places like Mississippi and what it means in terms of cost of living.
Yes. I mean, it's always been the case that some parts of the country have been more expensive than others. But those differences relative to the differences in incomes have grown a lot in the last couple decades. And a big driver of that has been growth in housing prices in certain places, housing and land. And so I think that's really what drives the big differences. Traded goods, so apples, price differences across places there are going to be relatively minor because those can be shipped. But housing is the big non-traded good that drives price differences.
And I guess the point is there that housing can't be moved around. Housing is where you live. I mean, that's sort of obvious. But it used to be that we used to say, well, New York's expensive, but you make a lot more. Your salary is double what it is in Biloxi, so it all kind of works out.
Yeah, for most of U.S. history, people would move from the poorer parts of the country to the richer parts of the country. It was a really strong trend from sort of the earliest times that we have data. But the last few decades have actually seen sort of a reversal in that pattern. Instead of moving to, the richest parts of the country now, Boston or New York or San Francisco, we see people moving to sort of mid-wage places in Florida and Phoenix or Las Vegas. That's a big change.
And is all of this just sort of the traditional pattern of people moving out of the cities towards the suburbs and then the far suburbs because they can get better houses, or is there something more at work here?
Well, my research has looked at the effect of regulations in driving a lot of this. And, the actual physical cost of building a house in Boston or in Texas is not that different, but the prices are very different. And the reason is because it's a lot harder legally to build in some of these cities, and that really drives up the price. I lived in an apartment building a few years ago with six stories, and it was very expensive. And why didn't they build the seventh story? It would have been profitable. We certainly know how to build one more story, and the reason was just sort of the zoning codes didn't allow it, and that's become pretty pervasive in parts of the country.
So what does it mean then if wages aren't keeping up with rental prices and home prices? As soon as I read that, I thought, well, isn't that what empties out the middle of cities when people can't pay their rent anymore? Can't that turn cities into ghost towns?
Well, what you see is you start to see very different patterns across education or skill type of the people who are moving in. So sort of the highly educated or college educated workers continue to move to these places that are expensive but offer high wages because, sort of the increase in rent doesn't wipe out their gains. But what we really see is lower skilled workers or workers without a college degree are much more likely to move away and to be priced out of certain markets.
Is this gentrification on the national scale?
In parts of the country, we're seeing sort of parts of the country diverge from the rest of the country in terms of how educated the workforce is. And I think that this is playing a big role.
So, Daniel Shoag, where's the sweet spot then? We know it's not in New York. We know it's definitely not in Washington, D.C., where I live. In Mississippi, things are good and cheap, but wages probably aren't quite as high, and maybe they don't have the same kinds of jobs that they have in some of the big cities. So what's a place that's like maybe the sweet spot right now in all of America where you get the best bang for your buck and the best house and the best job?
Well, I mean, everyone has different preferences, and so my training as an economist is to say, well, people make the right choices, and it actually seems like we see people moving to places that offer them good deals. And so the parts of the country that are growing are places that offer, even if they don't have the highest wages, they offer the best, sort of the best bundle of things, prices and wages and space. So
everybody's moving to Phoenix.
Well, I've only been there once, but it was lovely. Shockingly cold.
Colder than you thought. But there's a good chance that a dollar or even 10 bucks in Phoenix, hey, it goes a lot further than it does where I live on 16th Street in the nation's capital. That's for sure. Well, that's Daniel Shoag. He's assistant professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Thank you so much, Daniel.
Thanks.
Well, we've been asking you how far your dollar goes. Sarah writes on Facebook, in Oklahoma City, $1 for some candy, $1,000 for a nice 2 or 3 bedroom apartment with amenities, and for $300,000, a new 2,500 square foot 4 bedroom, 2 bath with high end finishes in a gated community. And this from Austin, Texas. You can buy a bottle of water for less than a dollar. You can rent a nice-ish 2-bedroom apartment for $1,000. For $300,000, you could buy a 5-bedroom house on the east side with that, or a nice 3-bedroom in a safe neighborhood. Not bad in Austin, Texas. Tell us how far your dollar stretches where you live at 8778-MYTAKE. You can leave us a comment at facebook.com/thetakeaway.